All right. With that gavel, I will call today's meeting to order of the Faculty Senate on Wednesday, January 21st. First things up is a verification of the quorum. Joan, can you verify that we have a quorum?
Yes, we have quorum.
Great. So then next up is an adoption of the agenda for today's meeting. As you make a motion, if you could just try to shout out your last name so we can get in the records as Joan is working to learn folks' names. So if I could have a motion to adopt the agenda for today's meeting. Thank you, Felicia Bohannon. A second. Sorry, Sahar. All right. All in favor of adopting the agenda for today's meeting, please say aye. Aye. All right. Agenda is adopted. Next up is approval of the November 19th, 2025 minutes. If I could have a motion to approve the minutes. Thank you, Therese. A second. Thank you, Scott Stallcup. Any discussion, edits, revisions, changes? Hearing none, I will call it to question. So all in favor of approving the minutes for the November 19th, 2025 meeting, please say aye. Aye. Opposed? Abstentions? All right. Laura Johnson abstaining. All right. That brings us to public comment. Joan, do we have any public comment today? All right. No public comment. So that brings us to the Faculty Senate President's announcements, item six. First, I just want to say welcome to the spring 2026 semester. I know it feels like we're deep in the semester already, but I just wanted to say I hope everyone had a good break as was available to you. I also hope as the semester is unfolding or that the semester is unfolding within the bounds of your plans, or at least not too far off from where you started, given that we're only about a week, 2 weeks into the teaching portion of the semester. So hopefully it's still somewhat on course. And while there's a lot to be said about unplugging and recharging and getting away from the day-to-day professional obligations and responsibilities, I have found a lot of value, particularly in these current times, in reconnecting with those areas that I have agency and control in my professional domain, where I can take action, make a difference, and otherwise productively use my expertise and my time. So I hope you all find a sense of purpose and control as you re-engage with your professional identity as a member of NIU's community. With that being said, I have a few announcements for today. First, be on the lookout for the, we are in the recruitment season for university committees and different service opportunities. So you'll see these in the NIU announcements and other avenues where these opportunities may come your way. So please consider any opportunities that you might be tapped on the shoulder for, or that folks that you can see yourself in. Having strong voices that represent our faculty, our staff, and our students are essential to the health of NIU now and in the long run. So do be aware of those various opportunities, not just for yourself, but also think about those in your networks that might be well suited in those service opportunities and leadership opportunities, and think about how you can help move our campus forward through engaging in the responsibilities and opportunities we have to have available to us through our connection and our professional identities here at NIU. The next item up is a campus climate survey. This will be coming out. It launches on January 27th. So you'll see an invitation to participate. This is open to all faculty, staff, and students at NIU. This is an every 3 year activity that is used to understand our campus community's perceptions and experiences related to inclusion, respect, and belonging. These results are used to inform improvements for all students, faculty, and staff. NIU has partnered with Viewfinder, which is a national leader in diversity and inclusion assessment, to administer and analyze the survey. And in the summary, I will share the website that has been developed to communicate and provide more information on this campus climate survey. Next up is the Real Talk Conference, which is coming up. February 5th is the pre-conference, and February 6th is the conference itself. This is free to NIU folks, so please consider attending these sessions. The keynote speakers and other activities that are related to the conference. There are sessions and information which align with our university goals and values. Consider bringing your class to a session or to the conference as is available, as is possible and aligned with you. There's I will be sharing some information that was passed along to me by those folks who are planning the conference about ways potentially to engage your coursework, your class materials with some of the key speakers that are coming, and opportunities to engage in that conference. My last announcement has to do with yet another activity that you hopefully will help bolster or provide professional development to you and to your peers and your students. There's an engagement exemplar week on April 13th to the 17th. And this is put on by the Engagement Roundtable, which is a shared leadership group. And there will be a week-long series of events as part of this Engagement Exemplar Week. It's being called the Community Engagement, Learning from and with Communities. There's going to be activities, presentations, learning symposiums, and opportunities to network within the campus, but also with some of our community partners and some community groups from outside of, from within DeKalb, hopefully, as well as other places across the state. This Exemplar Week will include both the Presidential Engagement and Partnership Professorship Awards, as well as a kickoff for a project which will be announced ahead of it. I'm helping co-plan that, so I do encourage you, along with the other ones, to join all these opportunities to learn with your colleagues, to improve your practice and shape the experiences our students have. And that concludes my announcements. So I will move on to the next agenda item, which are the provost announcements, and I will turn that over to our provost, Elish Piper.
Thank you. I want to reiterate Ben's message of Happy New Year, and hopefully your spring semester is off to a good start. I want to start with just a quick update on enrollment. Our spring re-enrollment looks very strong. We're up significantly over where we were last spring, which is really encouraging. We're kind of lagging with graduate student re-enrollment. And so I have a request for you, specifically if you are working with students who are doing their theses or dissertations. They oftentimes tend to register late or forget to register. So if we can encourage them to re-enroll, as well as students who are in cohort-based programs, oftentimes because their courses are set out for them, they tend to forget to register. And we want to make sure that we're counting in the 10-day count, which will conclude after Monday's classes, all the students that we're teaching, advising, mentoring accurately. So if you can encourage students to re-enroll, that would be great. I also want to announce that today a new website went live. It is niu.edu/AI. This is an effort that grew out of the AI task force and also the AI network to try and create a landing page that brings together all of the great work that's happening at NIU related to artificial intelligence. And so this site, which I think you can see behind me, just want to draw your attention to a few components so that when you have a few minutes, you can have an opportunity to dig into it more deeply. There's a section on guidance for the use of AI in teaching and learning that came out of the task force. There's also information about the NIU AI network that continues to meet a couple times a month and is a very broad group. And so if you haven't participated and you're interested, you can click there and find out more information. There's also the student guide to AI that was released right about the start of the semester that provides general guidance for students regarding the use of AI in their courses and in their academic pursuits. And then there's also a great tool about using Microsoft Copilot, which is a tool that's part of our Microsoft suite that offers additional information about what it can do and how it works and the pros and cons of that. There's also a research showcase that identifies some of our NIU faculty who are engaged in AI research. I have a request if you are part of that or know others and you'd like to add that information, we encourage you to make us aware of that so we can grow this website and it can become increasingly robust. There's also a news page that provides information about teaching, research, and other initiatives related to AI that are happening at NIU, and then there's an FAQ section. And so as you look at that, if you have things that you'd like to suggest are added to the website, they have an email for that that is just ai@niu.edu, and we hope to really grow this website and really provide greater representation about the work that's happening here at NIU related to AI. And I want to give a shout out to our colleagues also in the Center for Innovative Teaching and Learning that took the lead at pulling all of this together and creating this unified website. So that's what I have for my announcements. Thank you.
Thank you, Lori. All right, that brings us up to item 8. Which are items for Faculty Senate consideration. We have two today. The first one up is Digital Accessibility Task Force, and we have Holly Nicholson and Sarah Garner who will present on this. So if you would like to come up.
Thank you for letting the opportunity to speak with Faculty Senate today. We're just going to provide a verbal update about the Digital Accessibility Task Force. My co-lead for the Steering Committee, Holly Nicholson, will provide a verbal update about Title II regulations, and I'll talk a little bit about the next step. So I'm going to turn over to Holly.
Hi, everyone. Thanks for having us. So I want to set some context here. We've been talking about digital accessibility at NIU for years, but you probably heard the discussions kind of ramp up lately, and that's because there was an update to Title II of the Americans with Disabilities Act. What is that? As some of you may know, some of you may not be familiar, but it states that state and local governments and other entities must make services, programs, and activities accessible to people with disabilities. And so this includes our websites, our mobile apps, and it does include universities and private universities who receive federal funding. So in 2024, the Department of Justice issued a final rule about Title II of the ADA, and that was simply to set the technical specifications of compliance for websites and mobile apps. So the scope for that: websites, digital documents, web apps, and mobile apps. And there's some limited exceptions which deal with archived content or certain pre-existing documents and certain social media types of posts. So they set a deadline for April 2026. But what I want to focus on is that compliance with Title II is a continuous improvement. It isn't a final destination. So, you know, while you'll hear maybe about opening us up to fines or lawsuits, it's really about our intention to become accessible to people with disabilities. And this is for all public universities across the nation. So this is not just an NIU thing.
Awesome. Thank you so much, Holly. So what is NIU doing to make sure we're complying with these new federal regulations? We've put together, the university, Dr. Freeman has put together a Digital Accessibility Steering Committee, and this came out of a recommendation of the Digital Accessibility Task Force. So the committee is a representation of CIDL, faculty, academic affairs folks, web communications, and I know I'm missing people in regards to the makeup of the group. As we move forward with the work, we definitely understand the climate with constrained resources. We're in a pinch for time and also other broad external factors that we're all facing as a public institution of higher education in this climate right now. Some of the questions that as we move forward with this work have surrounded, like, what exactly must be changed and why? Who's responsible for updating content, and what resources are available for training and remediation. As we move forward, I do encourage you to reach out to Holly and I offline if you have any other questions specific or would like issues addressed within the committee. We also, if you want more work with this, reach out to Ben, and we would love to include you in the steering committee because the faculty voice is important as we move forward with this work in this semester. And so, again, I thank you for your time. And again, reach out to Holly or I offline if you do have any questions or concerns. We can help as we move forward with Title II compliance. Thank you.
Thank you. And as they mentioned, if you have interest in participating in the steering committee, please let me know and we can work to connect you with the steering committee and find a way for you to engage with the work as it is implemented here at campus. All right. Next up is Student Success Initiatives, which will be presented by Vice Provost for Academic Affairs, Lisa Shadiman. So, and the clicker, I think, is up there. Yep.
Perfect. Thank you. So it's a big, broad title, Student Success Initiatives. Oh, maybe I can't use the clicker. If it's not working, you can just advance the slide too, John. That's fine. So this is our student model of success, and I've shared this before with Faculty Senate. You can go ahead. Ties into our university goals, especially recruitment and retention is more of what our student success initiatives that we're focusing on now. You can go ahead. Maybe. There you go. So many of you use Navigate. We'd love to have more faculty using Navigate, especially for alerts. We have about a 35% adoption of use of Navigate's for alerts and other things, but please encourage your colleagues to do that. We introduced two new campaigns this year as a pilot. We as an institution do not require attendance taking in our courses. Some of you do and may incorporate that into your assessments. But as across the board, we don't require attendance. But it is really important for us to know, especially with our first year freshmen, to know if they're attending class. you all want them to attend. We would like to know if they're not attending. So we introduce as a pilot this semester with our first year CLAS major specifically to see how faculty would respond to letting us know if students are in class or not in class in those first 10 days of the semester. If we can catch them in those first 10 days, we can do outreach to them. We can follow up if they're in our residence halls to actually get their their floor advisor to go and knock on the door and see if they're there. Or if they're not attending and they've actually left the institution and just didn't tell us, we can also catch that early instead of waiting until later. So we did pilot that. That went out to about 300 different sections. We had about 70 faculty respond to those. So about 23% of faculty responded, which is great. We identified over 50 students that did not attend or participate in that first week of classes. If you have gotten one of those and you have not responded, please respond. It's open until Thursday. Please let us know so we can do some individual outreach. We would like to expand this to other classes, especially, again, our first-year students. So if you have any feedback on that, you were able to complete that, have any feedback about the form itself. It comes from Navigate, so there's not a whole lot we can do with the form. Basically, you can just click through and say they did not attend or did not engage. Some students registered late. As the provost mentioned, we still have students who are signing into classes. But some students, we just know that they're not here at all. They haven't signed into Blackboard. They have not attended. So we'd like to get that information as early as possible. But we want your feedback on this. If you did receive it and did or did not complete it, we'd like your feedback. The other campaign, the two in the middle, we've been doing for a while with our athletes. So if you have student athletes, you'll get this mid-semester. But we're introducing a new one this semester for a midterm progress report. Again, to get at those first-year freshmen, we have really added to a lot of our services in the Husky Academic Success Center. We want to try to capture those first-year freshmen mid-semester before it's too late to do anything about those grades. So if you do get a progress report request, again, please fill it out. It helps us if they're not doing well mid-semester, we can do some outreach and maybe help them turn it around. Okay, you can go ahead. Thank you. So this is what it looks like if you got this form. If you've received this before from our student athletes, for example, the form might look familiar. You can just go in and click. You do not have to do it for the last day of attendance because we're in the first 10 days. If they've never attended, you just do a click through and then that's it. Just click submit. And that goes off to our Navigate folks, Brandon, who will then turn it over to a team of folks to reach out from our Center for Student Assistance or working with housing, et cetera. You can go ahead. This is what the midterm grade progress report looks like. Are they at risk to fail your class? Yes or no? If they're at risk, again, our team will reach out from Center for Student Assistance or Husky Academic Success Center, get them connected with tutoring, with supplemental instruction, whatever we need to do. Okay. So there's a bunch of faculty workshops coming up at CITL. If you're not using Navigate or your faculty are new, want some information, the progress reporting campaign, Brandon will be doing those January 20th and January 22nd, so you can sign up. And information about the midterm progress reports are also in February. So those will go out week 7, I think, is when they're scheduled to go out. So please, if you do get them, we would appreciate if you could let us know how your students are doing. You can go ahead. Just as a reminder, I've been working with the NIU library. If you're interested, this is a book discussion. As we work on how we respond to different demographic shifts in universities, we just have this general open-ended book discussion. Please come. It's at the NIU library. You can also access the book for free. We have it as an ebook through our library, so you don't have to buy the book, but please come. Okay. Carnegie Engage courses, Ben mentioned that we're going to be celebrating a lot of Community Engagement Week, but I want to, as a reminder, let you know what's going on with our Community Engage designated courses. You can go ahead. So these are all of our undergraduate courses that have been designated and sections. You can do either a section level designation or a full course designation. Full course goes through curriculum, and the section level is just a Qualtrics form. In both cases, you have to let us know what the learning outcomes are, and then you have to assess those learning outcomes at the end of the course and provide that information. So this is a big list of undergraduate. We also have them for graduate courses. You can go ahead, John. We also have them for graduate courses, so either or both. If you teach a cross-section course, grad and undergrad, we're happy to have you in there as well. You can keep going. We're doing a couple of information sessions. If you're curious about, does my course qualify as a community engaged course? I'm doing a workshop in February. You'll find that information on the CITL webpage as well. And then Melanie Dufferin will do a little bit deeper dive on how her community engaged courses also support her research. And that'll be coming up in April. Course student evaluations, I put that on here because this is really one of our areas to support student success if we're able to capture good data from our students. So we're collecting quantitative as well as qualitative information. We do have a course evaluation policy. So if you're not familiar with that, you can check the policy library, see what that looks like. It does provide evidence for our instructors and faculty for course improvements. And I'll give you a little synopsis. You can go ahead, Joe. Thanks. So this is the course evaluation policy. It's not very long. We are required in policy that all sections with 5 or more students be evaluated at the end of the course. And then we have one required university level course question, which is my overall rating of the instructor's effectiveness. This is the only university required course question. We do have college level questions, department questions, and then instructors can add their own courses questions. You can go ahead. So our current course evaluation platform is called Explorance Blue. I just sent out a reminder to your chairs about an hour ago, reminding them of the spring evaluation questions period when that will open. So our course evaluations open when the class is 75% complete. It doesn't matter what the dates are, it goes off of your end date. So if you have a dynamically scheduled course, meaning it's not 16 weeks, it's 8 or 10 or whatever, those are the dates that are used for the course evaluations. So once the course reaches 75% of completion, they automatically get this link and can fill it out. So Explorance Blue, we've had this contract for 9 years. It's for all of our graduate courses, undergraduate courses, as well as the College of Law. Currently, it's overseen by Testing Services in Academic Affairs. That contract was coming up for renewal because we were coming to the end of its life, and we were looking for different options. One was basically a savings, trying to figure out economically, is this the best deal we can get to run our course evaluations? So we did explore a bunch of options, and we landed on one we think will give us a really good, maintain all of our functionality that we like with course evaluations and reduce cost. So the one we landed on is Anthology Evaluate. It's the same company as Blackboard. Go ahead. So what does that look like? We put together an implementation team. So we have representatives from the colleges, representatives from testing services, from our IT folks, we have a faculty member, thanks to Jimena. I think she's on Faculty Senate, right? Been on Faculty Senate? No? Okay. So Jimena is there as a faculty member. If you're interested in joining, feel free to join. Weekly calls from now to the end of the semester. So just putting that out there if you really want to do it. So this is our implementation team. If you know someone and don't want to participate, but you know somebody on the implementation team, certainly we're looking for feedback. The first part is really making sure that functionally it all works, getting those questions that are at the college level and department level into the system. So we plan to replicate basically the same structure that we have right now. You can go ahead. So timeline, we signed the contract with Anthology in December. We had one kickoff call in January with the NIU team, and we just got our project manager from Anthology. So we will have our first official with our project manager team next week. And like I said, we'll be meeting weekly until April when we plan to go live. Explorance Blue, our contract runs through June 30th, which is not great because it's in the middle of the summer semester. So it will, the last semester for Explorance Blue will be this semester in spring of 26. So we'll launch the new platform in the summer, and that will give us a little bit smaller number of courses offered. So that'll give us a little bit of test to make sure that we're all good. Okay, you can go ahead. And then I'll just end with a couple of announcements. Excellence in Undergraduate Teaching Award and Excellence in Undergraduate Instruction Award. We have a 60th anniversary this year. Woo-hoo. And we're the oldest institution in the state to award this kind of award for faculty excellence in teaching. Unless somebody wants to challenge me, but I'm pretty sure I checked my facts. So that's 60 years of that and Excellence in Undergraduate Instruction. This is our 20th anniversary. You can go ahead. So we have a Technology and Teaching Award. This was given, named David Raymond. He was one of the original trustees or a trustee at the institution. It comes with $1,000 because there's an endowment behind that. We will award that in April at the Faculty Awards Ceremony. So something to put on your calendars if it's not already. The deadline for that is March 20th, and it does require a public presentation in the fall. You can go ahead. Spring commencement, I know that seems so far away because we just started. It is May 9th. Please, I encourage all of you to come. I know many faculty members go to the grad ceremony, but it'd be great if we had a lot of more faculty at the undergrad ceremony. In particular, we're hoping to encourage instructors to come to the undergraduate faculty. So we have started a small lending of regalia in the Husky Closet. If you know folks who are retiring and wonder what they're going to do with their regalia, please have them donate it there so people can sign that out. That would be great. And encourage faculty to come to the ceremony. You can go ahead. IDSP courses, if you saw that come through, those are interdisciplinary courses we are piloting in the summer. So if you have a really cool course that you've thought about or you're interested in co-teaching with a colleague somewhere across campus, please submit them to be considered for an IDSP undergraduate special topics course this summer. We're taking applications through February 1st. Your chairs would have had that. It was also in the Provost Post newsletter that just recently came out. Courses must be offered in online, either asynchronous or synchronously. We're trying to encourage more of our adult learner population to take some summer classes, but also our undergraduates maybe who need an elective. We're going to consider those for general education if that's also something that you're interested in. We are going to have them reviewed by the General Education Committee of the BC for approval for that. And you can go ahead. We're also looking for an undergraduate faculty fellow in the provost's office. That was in the provost's post as well. We're accepting applications through the end of February if that's something that you're interested in. And so the faculty fellow assists me with a lot of the student success initiatives that I've outlined today. So if that is something that really piques your interest, we would love to have your application. And I think I'm getting close to the end. Yep, I'm like at the end. Yeah, thank you very much.
Thank you, Alicia. There is a lot in there. You have a big portfolio that you help navigate to help support student success. Are there any questions, comments, or thoughts? Right. Well, thank you very much, Alicia. All right. We have no unfinished business for today. Which brings us to new business, item 10. We have two items there. The first one up is the Bob Lane Faculty Advocacy Award, a call for nominations. So you'll see on page 8 of the packet, the call for nominations is in there. The request is that you submit written letters of nomination to myself and Joan no later than noon on Wednesday, February 11th. You can see this recognizes an NAU faculty member for special service to the faculty. We have past recipients are in the packet. If you have any questions or would like to see examples of recommendation letters or otherwise want to discuss this call, please don't hesitate to reach out and let me know. But again, if you have somebody you would like to nominate and you can nominate yourself as well, please make sure that that letter comes to myself and Joan no later than Wednesday, February 11th. All right, and that brings us to the proposed amendment to the Faculty Senate bylaws, Article 14, pages 9 through 12. You'll see the packet there, and I'll invite up Dennis Brain, who's the chair of the Faculty Senate Rights and Responsibilities Committee, as well as Todd Reeves and any other members of the Faculty Rights and Responsibilities Committee that would like to stand up. You're welcome to, or you can stay in your seat. James, I'll call you out for not standing up. But and I will turn it over to Dennis to introduce this item. And this is a first reading, so there's no action, no motion. It's a presentation, and then discussion will be asked for afterwards.
Sort of the second first reading. So you might recall at the first Faculty Senate meeting this academic year, we held the first reading of proposed changes to Article 14 of the Faculty Senate bylaws. Those bylaws address procedures to be employed when allegations are raised concerning infringement upon academic freedom at NIU. So there was some discussion we had at that first reading. And after that first reading, our committee decided to go back to work on the proposal, make significant changes in response to some of the issues that were raised at that first reading, the first reading. So we eventually designated a working subcommittee to make further changes that we had discussed in our committee meetings. And I want to thank the members of that committee, Todd Reeves, who's standing right here, and then Emily McKee, who's probably here somewhere or other there, and then James Burton. I want to thank them for their excellent work on this revision. We approved that revision within our Faculty Rights and Responsibilities Committee, and we're now presenting that those changes for a first new reading. And because that those proposals are significantly different from what we first proposed in that first reading. So there are several improvements that we made. I think the most significant improvement that was made is now that it the new version of Article 14 that we're proposing sets forth that the NIU faculty and the Faculty Senate should have full purview in most such cases involving academic freedom at NIU. So we're putting an emphasis on that. I'll now turn the presentation over to Todd Reeves.
Thank you, Dennis. So as explained, the proposed revisions to Article 14 reflect continued work by the Faculty Senate Faculty Research or Faculty Rights and Responsibilities Committee. While Emily, James, and I took the lead on this effort, Ben Creed and Pat Erickson also offered helpful insights based on their extensive institutional knowledge, and other members of the committee made important contributions as well, including the chair, Dennis. One key aspect of the proposed revisions that should be immediately apparent is the reproduction of the hearing procedure language from Article 10 directly within Article 14. That language was also revised and adapted to better align with academic freedom issues specifically, rather than faculty dismissal proceedings, which is the context of Article 10. This change was made so as to not explicitly or implicitly constrain allegations of violations of academic freedom to only those situations involving personnel dismissal. There are also a number of additional revisions that arguably broaden the scope of what might be alleged as a violation of a faculty member's academic freedom. For example, we removed language that might imply that only, quote, majority decisions made by, quote, elected faculty committees can be alleged to have violated one's academic freedom. Similarly, the proposed revisions also remove language suggesting that only, quote, decisions or actions may be alleged to have violated academic freedom. These revisions also position faculty as the primary arbiters of threats to faculty academic freedom that originate from within our institution, while also accommodating scenarios that might require the involvement of the administration or the Board of Trustees or both. If the hearing committee decides that the complainant's academic freedom was violated, the proposed revisions empower the Faculty Senate Personnel Committee to implement any hearing committee recommendations that are within the purview of Faculty Senate. If violations persist after those efforts, Faculty Senate Personnel Committee is also empowered to refer the matter to the administration and/or the Board of Trustees. If the hearing committee's recommendations involve actions that are outside the purview of Faculty Senate, its decision is transmitted by the Faculty Senate Personnel Committee to the university administration and/or Board of Trustees. In those cases, the proposed revisions also require that the Faculty Senate Personnel Committee request a written explanation for any alternative decision made by the administration and/or the Board of Trustees. And with that, shaky spiel. I believe we'd like to open the floor for a discussion of the proposed revisions to Article 14, and in particular, Emily, James, and I, who I thought were going to be all up here together, welcome any questions or feedback you have that could help us strengthen the proposed amendments ahead of a planned second reading at our next Faculty Senate meeting.
All right, Bill Mills.
William Mills, Engineering Technology. I'm a certified industrial hygienist in addition to my PhD. And I do have, there's also people I think on campus who are, for example, a licensed physical therapist, registered nurses, and chartered CPAs, for example. And so one of my concerns is, we, in addition to just straight academics, normally, we also have professional standards Some of our students require our actual education to get certification in that. And I think sometimes I've seen conflicts between, for example, what a chair wants to bring as an instructor, what's an example of an approved instructor and all that sort of thing. And so I think as part of joint governance, it has to be recognized not only when it's your field of expertise, but when it's your field of professional. And you may have professional ethics. I know I do have professional ethics to raise things and that sort of thing, and not go into areas, for example, where I'm not qualified and that sort of thing. I'm wondering, has that been looked at as part of this academic freedom?
So I suppose my response would be that this article isn't defining what academic freedom is. It's an amendment that provides a vehicle for someone to allege that their academic freedom was violated. To your point about people within the context of a class, you know, deviating dramatically from the norms of the discipline, I think the AAUP policy statement around academic freedom in teaching kind of limits how deviant, or I suppose, your teaching could be. So this isn't trying to define academic freedom, but there are a lot of nuances, I would say, around kind of the requirements of professional organizations or accreditors as to what the instruction looks like. And there can be some tensions. So hopefully that addresses your...
Yeah, well, I looked at the AAUP and it actually doesn't address it. Before I came up, I looked at it. It really does not talk about professional certifications and your professional responsibilities here.
Again, we kept that intentionally vague. We talked many times in the committee about really narrowing down what academic freedom is and what it isn't. But we, as a committee, we decided that it would be best to keep it broad so that we could include things like what you're talking about. If the faculty member believes this is a violation of academic freedom, they can start this process through this procedure.
Yeah. All right. So all I'm really trying to do right now is make an administrative record so that if that comes up in the future, that it is in fact included and was looked at.
Yeah. So I'll add one more thing. Yeah. We don't define academic freedom in here, but we do. One of the revisions that was made was broadening who and what kind of bodies might be infringing. So we broadened it. It used to be implied that it was just committee decisions that might infringe on your academic freedom. And we've broadened it, I forget the exact language, but to bodies or individuals within the university.
Yeah. And I think to build on that point, the preamble, if you will, this is a grievance procedure for violation of academic freedoms. And then that first sentence in the preamble, by other members of the university. So if it is a professional association that is constraining, that is outside of the scope of this grievance procedure, as I understand it. This is about within NIU's structure, systems, and the university, not the imposition and requirements and professional standards of an accrediting body external to the university, if that also adds to that record from what you're asking about. But this is an internal to NIU grievance procedure, as I understand it, correct?
But I think it needs to be recognized that NIU's education is actually being depended upon for some of these professional certifications, and the faculty may be, in fact, being required to, for example, validate or verify that things in that were covered. And then you get into professional ethics as well. And that also, I think, impacts academic freedom. I just want to raise this issue. Okay. Thank you.
Thank you, Bill. If anybody else would like to make a comment, please come up. In the meantime, I just want to say thank you to this group. And to me, it's an improvement, and it's based on a shared governance approach where I know our chief strategy officer came and met Matt Streb to weigh in on things. General counsel has shared perspective. There's been communications with the provost office and with the president related to the updates of these. And I think these have all manifest in a much improved process that respects responsibilities and roles of various groups on campus, but also centers, faculties, protection, and ability to adjudicate in a more even-handed way or in a better way than it was before allegations of academic freedom. So I just appreciate the working group's diligence on continuing to improve that. So thank you. All right. Yeah, and as was mentioned, this is a first read, so we will see this again at our next Faculty Senate meeting for a second read and a vote to adopt the proposed amendments. We'll take a vote in alignment with our processes at that next meeting. All right, that brings us to the reports from councils, boards, and standing committees. First up is the Faculty Advisory Council to the IBHE, and we have a report from Tiffany Puckett. And this time, unlike the last public meeting, I won't speak on her behalf. But last time I started talking about a totally different report instead of turning it over to you. So go ahead.
Good afternoon, everyone, and I hope everyone enjoyed their winter break. Trying to fight a sinus infection that's coming on and pending, if you can hear it. So in between our last meeting and now, we have had three FAC meetings, one at SIU Carbondale, one on Zoom, and one hosted by Elgin Community College. And so I'll just give you a quick summary of things. We spent a lot of time discussing with IBHE, with their increased employment of people for student success. They are continuing to hire to really focus on the area of student success. There were, and I reported this to University Council in December, but there was an emphasis on the governor's report about student growth across the public universities. The increases that happened across the universities, there was a total enrollment increase for the public universities, undergrad enrollment of 3.8%, 6.5% increase in transfers, 18% increase in dual enrollment, 9.7% increase in African-American students, 8% increase in Latin American students, and 14.1% decrease in international graduate students. And then it was like an 82% retention. We also had an opportunity in the December meeting to speak with IBHE's chair to have some of the questions that FAC had and their concerns addressed. One of the biggest conversations was what was IBHE's position regarding the potential of community colleges issuing bachelor's degrees. It was no like final answers around it, but it was more discussion about, you know, the policy behind these programs would be just to make sure that rural people in rural students in rural communities have access to bachelor's degrees, that if there's any type of program, they're trying to make sure that there's parameters being put in place where it's not going to impact the four-year schools who are offering those bachelor's degrees. So I guess we'll hear more about that later. Also, there, you know, was just different discussion from the different working groups about different things. We continue in the public caucus to talk about student accessibility and the changes that are going to be coming. And you know, we're just all at this point getting ready for this school, this semester. And so we will have our next meeting on February 20th on Zoom. And so, I'll give you a direct report then. This was like a summary of the last three meetings at this point. Anybody have any questions? Thank you.
Thank you. Hopefully the sinus infection goes quick. All right, next up is the UAC to the BOT. The report I will give, and then others are welcome to add if they'd like, but the BOT met in December, and at that Board of Trustees meeting, the main points of information relevant to this body were the presentation and approval of the 2026 university goals and the annual performance review and evaluation of President Freeman. These are both publicly available, and I strongly encourage you to review the 2026 university goals to see how the feedback from this body and in other conversations were incorporated. And this also represents a guiding document for the current calendar year. The Board of Trustees will meet next in committees on February 19th. There will likely be important updates in terms of where we are in fiscal year 26 and where campus is in the process for developing the budget for fiscal year 27. This is also typically the meeting where items such as sabbaticals and tuition and fee recommendations are discussed. That's historically been the case. I don't know for sure, but that's typically the rhythm. So it's an important one to look for the board reports and learn about what's going on campus as always. It's important, but I think these ones are even more important this year going forward. So that is the report from the UAC to the BOT. We have no report from the Baccalaureate Council, no report from Faculty Rights and Responsibilities or Social Justice Committee or the Rules, Governance, and Elections Committee. I didn't see Nathan in the crowd or Jacoby, so I don't know if we have an SGA report. All right. But do we have an operating staff report? I don't think so. Is that correct? Yep. And then Felicia. So then we have a supportive professional staff council report from Felicia Bohannon.
So we are in the process of accepting applications for the SPSS dependent scholarship. And one of the big changes this year is that we've previously been able to offer two scholarships based on the funds available. We will only be able to offer one scholarship this year, and that's in the amount of $1,250. So that's a big change for us. We actually, as I said, been able to offer two scholarships in the past. We're also preparing for elections for the spring, and then we're also preparing for SPSS awards. Thank you.
Thank you, Felicia. All right, that brings us to informational items. A through N are the policy library minutes from various bodies on campus. Item O, you'll see our schedule for the spring semester here. We have next meeting on February 18th. And again, that meeting, we will have a second reading and a vote on an amendment. So please do make sure you're there. And if you're unable to attend, make sure you get an alternate so that we have enough folks to meet our requirements to take a vote and take action on that recommendation. That brings us to adjournment. Can I have a motion to adjourn today's meeting of the Faculty Senate? Thank you, Therese. In a second. McKee, sorry, I heard a voice, but all in favor of adjourning the meeting, please say aye.
Aye.
All right, thank you very much.